Welcome to another Poetica podcast from RN. I'm Justine Sloan-Lees. Tales of a Severed Head is a sequence of poems by the Moroccan activist, Muslim feminist, teacher and writer Rashida Madani, published for the first time in English translation in 2012. The book is a poetic retelling of the ancient Arabic 1001 Nights, where Scheherazade tells a story every night to keep the paranoid and woman-hating king from beheading her. Madani's sequence of poems is a feminist retelling of the story, focusing on masculinity and femininity, power and evil. The poems are intensely impressionistic and often border on the surreal in their attempts to convey emotional and intellectual trauma. Madani's work is also informed by Moroccan political history. When King Hassan II came to power in 1963, while Madani was still a schoolgirl, he instituted a policy of repression of political opponents, both nationalist and communist, targeting intellectuals, writers, poets, and historians in particular. Tales of a Severed Head responds to this context and is about the suppression and censorship of the voice, especially the female voice. In this bilingual program, you'll hear a selection of poems in English from Tales of a Severed Head, translated by Marilyn Hacker, as well as some poems in the original French. The poems are read by Mingzhu He. But we'll start with a preface from the British mythographer Marina Warner, who describes the original 1001 Nights tale that Madani draws on.
What happens is that at the very beginning, one brother, who's called Shahzaman, who is the king of Samarkand, comes back to his palace one day early because he's been out hunting, and he finds his wife in bed with a black slave. There's an element of racism in some of these stories. And he instantly cuts off both their heads and throws the bodies out of the window. He's then absolutely disconsolate, but he decides that he will go and visit his brother, Shahryar, who is king of the Indies. And one day, Shahryar has gone out hunting, but Shahzaman has got a headache and decided not to go out hunting with him. And he hears a noise coming from the harem, and he looks over the wall into the harem garden, and what does he see but the sultana saying, "Ah, Shahryar's gone out hunting, come, come, come." And another black slave appears out of a tree, and then all her maidservants all call to their lovers, and soon a massive orgy is going on in the palace gardens of the harem. So Shahzaman, who up to that point had felt himself to be a miserable cuckold, feels that things are even worse in his brother's palace and cheers up a bit. But then he decides, when Shahryar comes back from hunting, he decides that he will reveal to him this dreadful state of affairs in his harem. So Shahryar then decides that his sultana must die, all the maidservants must die, and he from then on will marry a virgin every day and will kill her in the morning. So he begins on this tremendous season in hell, and very soon, of course, all the mothers in the country have either smuggled their daughters beyond the borders or they have disguised them as boys in order to keep them safe. But Scheherazade, who is the daughter of the Grand Vizier, who is the one who's had to collect the new wife and bring her to the bedroom, says to her father that she wants to be the next candidate. And he resists very, very forcefully. He tells her many warning stories about what happens. And she says, no, she has a plan. And her plan involves taking her little sister with her. And they will prevent the Sultan carrying out what is called his bloody vow. She will tell him stories. She doesn't tell her father that's her plan, but that's what she does. And she says to her little sister, Dinarzade, she says, "When I've made love to the Sultan on the first night, as soon as it's over, you must pop up and say, 'Sister dear, I can't sleep. Please tell me a story to soothe my spirits.'" and then I will start telling a story, says Shahrazad, and the Sultan will be so agog with what he's hearing that he will want to hear more. I mean, one tends to see images of her, if they're for adults, coiled around him in a seductive siren-like way. Or if it's a book for children, she's just persuading him. But the way the story is told in the book is that the three of them are pretty much in bed together, Dinarzade, Shahrazad, and the Sultan. And she's telling a story almost as a mother tells a story to a child. And I think that this is a very brilliant twist on the notion that women are subtle, wily, and contrivers, schemers. Because what you're actually getting is a story of a woman who does use her tongue to get her way. Shahrazad is subtle, and the whole of her scheme to tell these stories and save her life is really a stratagem, as it might be in the wiles of women. So the outer story about women's treachery and their fickleness and infidelities and so forth, that is a misogynist story. And the story of her telling the stories has its roots in misogyny, that women will talk their way out of anything, but it turns it around. And gradually, as the stories unfold, they introduce an immense cast of different human personalities. And the general impression of the book is that the Sultan, jumping to conclusions and immediately chopping off someone's head, was acting in a very brutal, brutish way, a primitive way. Whereas if you actually pay attention to the complexity of the world, you will see that people have many different passions, many different motives, and that there are shades and subtleties and nuances to everybody's conduct and passions, and that if one's going to be a just and wise ruler, one should know that, one should understand that and have patience to watch and see and show mercy and show justice. So she turns what is a trope, a sort of misogynist trope, that, you know, a seductive woman in bed with a man can get whatever she wants. She turns that seductive trope around and makes a book that is a kind of what was called in the Middle Ages a manual for princes, a guide to good government for a man with power.
First Tale. 1. What city and what night, since it's night in the city, when a woman and a train station argue over the same half of a man who is leaving? He is young, handsome. He is leaving for a piece of white bread. She is young, beautiful as a springtime cluster, trying to flower for the last time for her man who is leaving. But the train arrives. But the branch breaks. But suddenly it's raining in the station in the midst of spring. And the train emerges from all directions. It whistles and goes right through the woman, the whole length of her. Where the woman bleeds, there will never be spring again. In the night, in her head, under the pillow, trains pass filled with men, filled with mud, and they all go through her, the whole length of her. How many winters will pass? How many snowfalls before the first bleeding letter? Before the first mouthful of white bread?
Premier conte, 5. De combien de vies châtrées la femme est-elle née? De combien d'hommes vampires de demi-dieux ivres de sable? Combien a-t-il fallu de pompes aux dégringolés du ciel? La terre est si peu vaste qu'elle va toujours vers la même arbre. Est-ce toujours la femme qui va vers l'arbre? Je me contenterai d'une grenade et jamais je ne me sentirai coupable d'être cette pomme qui te tranche la gorge. Car je ne suis pas née de ta lèvre, je ne suis pas née de ton cœur, ni de ton crin. Et si j'avais su que tu resterais tordu à vie, je ne serais pas née non plus de ta côte. Combien a-t-il fallu de pommes pour que tu dégringoles nu du ciel, demi-dieu ivre de sable? Five. Of how many castrated cities is the woman born? Of how many vampire men and demigods drunk on sand? How many apples had to tumble down from the sky? The earth is so far from vast that she always goes toward the same tree. Is it always the woman who goes toward the tree? I would be satisfied with a pomegranate, and I would never feel guilty of being that apple which cuts your throat, because I was not born from your lips. I was not born from your heart or your skull. And had I known that you would stay crooked for life, I would not have been born from your rib either. How many apples did it take to make you tumble naked from the sky, demigod, drunk on sand? Nine. I is the word, the only one to be pronounced. I say I, and I look like myself. But the I is innumerable in the fever of my chest, in the catastrophe of my chest. I is innumerable in the glass garden where hangs, with sorrowful branches, a whole forest of trees toward the pool where they wither. Poor slaves, with jeweled names. Beneath the vicious eyes of a eunuch army have I returned to this racket of raptors. Is this the long-ago garden, the same owl hooting my death? Or have I reappeared in the same nightmare beneath a layer of mould? Did I ever leave this garden with locked doors? Was I really able, one day, to escape the vigilance of the Grand Vizier, head of the eunuchs and headsman in his off moments? Am I this woman prisoner of Sharia? Am I this woman who braids her hair, braids her grudges, and the path from which no one returns? Is it mine, this voice lighter than a feather, but still splinter, still riot in Sharia's harem? Have I retraced my steps back to this crystal palace where I am alone with you, oh my long hair, the only cry? Where am I? Who am I? One day, can we ask ourselves different questions? Onze. Je n'ai jamais quitté l'enceinte de ce jardin, jamais été au-delà de ces murailles. Depuis des siècles que je suis à la recherche d'une brèche où souffler dans ce château de cartes. Jamais pu franchir la rangée d'esclaves à la solde de Shahriar. Nouez-moi à ce jardin pas de milieu de lianes, par le parfum vénéneux de vos belles phrases, plus que par mes actes. Mes actes ne comptent pas. Je n'y suis que par l'absence de mes désirs. Je n'ai d'ailleurs pas. je hais, immobile. Ne pas bouger l'ordre suprême, mais bouger pour courir vers quelle prêche. Je hais, bâillonner, se taire, ne parler que sur ordre de charrière. Mais a-t-on déjà vu une femme se taire?
11. I have never left the enclosure of this garden, never been beyond its walls. For centuries, I have been searching for a gap to breathe through in this castle of cards. I have never been able to break through the ranks of slaves in Shariar service. I am tied in this garden by thousands of vines, by the venomous perfume of lovely sentences, more than by my actions. My actions do not count. I take part in them only by the absence of my desires. Besides, there is no I. I is immobilized. Not to move is the supreme command, but move to run toward what gap? I is gagged. To fall silent, only speak on Shariar's orders. But have you ever seen a woman stop talking? Sixteen. That man whom death holds at arm's length with tongs, what worm will eat him? And if the earth decided to flee from around his body, if his coffin cracked, if this corpse floated to the surface like a rotten fish, if the cemetery gathered up his shroud and fled holding its nose, where will the dead go to breathe if all the living stink like this? 19. I didn't even know how to read in the night that ripped my hands. I am no one in Shariar City. I am nothing. But I have words, pauper's words tattered all over, words stolen from the dog cemetery, from beneath the slaves' noses. And it is with these words that I intended to erode Shariar's palace, to make the glass gardens screech under Shariar's teeth. But when I wished to speak, they said to me, "Be quiet and be beautiful for him. Be quiet. We will speak in your place. We will recount you in your wanderings, in your rendings. We will make a theme of you. We will take charge of you for posterity." They say she and I seem to be myself. But Shahrazad is only an invention of men to clear Shariar's name. Shahrazad is only revenge postponed during the massacre. And it's thus that they stole my sentences, distorted my sentences, thus put into my mouth 1,001 stories of which I still knew nothing. It's thus that his dogs made me even more of a prisoner in his kasbahs, still more of a ghost, I, who wished to be endless. I didn't even know how to read in the night that ripped my hands, while he, neither man nor woman, even knew how to write, spoke in my name, stole my mouth, my only weapon in the city of crystal, while the other, draped in his silences, punctuated his laughter, offered me naked to the eyes of his slaves. She burned her fields when the wisest one among you died with ink-stained fingers. 25. I say, I, and innumerable arms rush to seize my fragile neck. I become the puppy that they drown. But it is not written that I will be the only one to die, nor that I will die before you. It is not written that I will die without having armed myself. You are the master. Our master, as long as you hold the key to the little doors to publishing a book. But it is not written that I will die without having armed myself. We are linked by our blood, always spilled. Whatever else could link us, you and I, in Shariar's fortress. I need only say I, and my hatred will burst in the glass garden, and a staircase will draw me toward a secret door out of the royal bedroom. A door forbidden among all doors, where winged horses await the grand departure. I will leave, all the better to return to the city of glass. You are the master. But what becomes of a master when the slaves rebel? Second tale. 2. I can't walk through the night forever without asking myself when a dawn will come that will deliver me from the night I move through. I can't resign myself to whistling in the night, to cosset my own fear, nor can I reconcile myself to finding fear obligatory on the road I'm travelling. I will rip apart the marble. I will open the harem gates. I will lift the trapdoors of underground cities, and my footsteps in the sun will be numbered for having escaped unscathed from Scheherazade's tales. Unscathed and clear-headed to pass on the cries from all the tombs. For I have listened at graves the way one listens at closed doors. Oh, if I only knew how to divert all those eunuchs' ears, I would tell your death until the living turned over in their graves. It's because sand and fear are mixed in the same speaking voice that this woman continues to crawl toward you, to search for you in your sleep, as if she knew all the shortcuts that lead to your mouth. Who moves forward? Toward what new fear? Who claims to save whom? Who could ever save you? Mutilated men, guardians of the royal chamber, unless night rises in your throats. And it's thus I move forward, line after line, with no illusions. And it's thus that the sand overcomes me, and I see the reddening sea advance toward me. But I will rip apart the marble. But I will open the harem gates. But I will lift the trapdoors of underground cities, even if my steps in the sunlight are numbered. Deuxième conte. Toi. Elle avance à contre-courant. Les vins ouvertes. Elle avance à flotte. De métamorphose en métamorphose, de poème en poème, elle avance. Et chaque poème est une barque vers l'autre rive. Donne-moi ta main, ma rose. La rivière reste traversée dans toute l'ampleur de sa vase. Qui sait combien de naufrages encore avant l'aube. Donne-moi ta main. Doucement, je chanterai. Doucement. Pour toi dans la noire, et ma voix onde dans la nuit, jusqu'à l'autre rive portera les papillons frêles de ton rire. Three. She moves upstream against the current. Her veins open. She moves in torrents. From metamorphosis to metamorphosis, from poem to poem, she moves forward, and every poem is a skiff headed for the other shore. Give me your hand, my rose. The stream is still there to be crossed, all its depths of sludge. Who knows how many more shipwrecks before dawn? Give me your hand. I'll sing softly, softly for you in the dark. And my voice, a wave in the night, will carry to the other shore the frail butterflies of your dream. Six. Each poem is a skiff headed for the other shore. Here, the wind shakes its yellow head of a pagan mourner, and men fall from the branches like rotten fruit. Here, houses bend from all their windows and crash into the street. Here, the poets die in prison. Here, a black car waits for him. Here he was taken elsewhere, where his fingers were cut off, where they blindfolded him and fired into his mouth. Here, just over there, they could not bury him. I will rescue you from the cities, as I plucked you out of the desert, my rose, dressed in wind and rain. The two of us in the skiff, and my mad rebel slave's blood howling. Howling till we reach the other shore.
Quinze. C'était un conte pour femmes défigurées, pour enfants sans rire. Un conte fracas dans le jardin de verre, après des siècles de ronde, des siècles de silence. Dans le palais de Shahriar. Ce fut le conte sanglot d'une femme déchirée, le conte sanglant d'une tête tranchée sur le chemin de la meute. Et sans une larme, dans le jardin de verre, prit la relève, la chouette, la plus noire.
Fifteen. It was a tale for disfigured women, for children unable to laugh. A tale crashing in the glass garden after centuries of patrols, centuries of silence in Shahriar's palace. It was the sobbing tale of a shattered woman, the bloody tale of a head severed on the way to revolt. And without a tear in the glass garden, the blackest owl took its turn to stand guard. Third tale. Three. Done with. Swallowed by the sewers of reality, my departures toward continents innocent of any patriarch's touch. My preposterous aspirations toward the open, where I am mistress of the seas, of myself, of lost ships. I have drowned my oceanic dreams where I was a mermaid, nightmare vision insinuated into my sleep by Sinbad, the sea wolf, a fantasy man, to separate me from myself, always either denying the head or trafficking the body. There is neither sea nor island where I can exist without that tide of nausea at being something not located, mutilated by a man's word that came before my desire to be born. There is no sea where I can wash myself of the thousand and one night's vaulted vagina tales. There is only a gangrenous land, without water, sleep, nor pardon. A violent land, where all I keep of mermaids is their scales, to ally myself with the first serpent and evict you, Shariar, from my woman's skin. Five. I lift the first veil and open the first door, where the first hell is a hell of words. Caravans set off within me and descend toward desert lands where no dog barks, no insect budges. From north to south, skulls are my only travelling companions. They keep still, and I hear myself speak of peace with poems of war. XIII. To remain silent is unjust. Where to disappear in the desert? To write more nakedly, more simply, Father. When I can no longer see my caravans, when fire has erased my passage, when I am detached, have had my fill of storms, when the desert carries everything away, I will climb onto a dune and rewrite the thousand and one nights to clear Shahrazad's name. Troisième conte, 14. Ainsi le gouffre sera plus grand, cri de loup dans la gerçure de la mort. Tout a bien fait de jeter des plages de silence dont le discours sucerait au clair de lune. J'ai bien fait de planter des barbelés entre toi et moi. Mais je ne sais comment de poèmes éclaboussés de ton sein sont venus un à un se ficher en moi. Il est vrai que le vent aggrave la solitude, qu'aux cimes des dunes saillissent les nostalgies et qu'il pousse de chants d'amour au milieu des otis. Mais il me coûte de te héler à coups de cris amers où la colère l'emporte et m'apparente à l'ouragan, de te perdre entre les lignes qui t'infligent le spectacle de mes entailles, tes ruines et mes défaites. Il me coûte de nous retrouver à couteau tiré dans les artères de cette vie déjà lointaine, où je suis à force de nous déchirer, les plus rien sans porte de recommencement. Mais c'est désormais ma façon d'être. Je n'ai pas à t'épargner dans la courroux des souks, en proie à la démence dans la foudre des vérités, enfin crachées.
Je n'ai pas à t'épargner. Nous nous aimerons plus tard, beaucoup plus tard, dans les cendres des palais de cristal.
14. So the gulf will be wider, wolves howling in love's fissures. Just as well that you cast layers of silence into the speeches whispered in the moonlight. Just as well that I stretched barbed wire between you and me. But I don't know how these poems, splattered with your blood, have come one by one to pierce me. It is true that the wind increases solitudes, that nostalgia hoists itself up to the dune's peak, and that fields of love grow in the midst of nettles. But it hurts me to call to you with embittered writing, where anger takes over and makes me sister to a hurricane, to lose you between the lines that inflict on you the sight of my gashed skin, your ruins, and my defeats. It hurts me to find us with knives drawn in the arteries of this already distant city, where rending us apart has left me out of reach of new beginnings. But this is my way from now on. I need not spare you. In the clamour of the marketplace, prey to madness. In the thunder of truths spat out at last. I do not need to spare you. We will love each other later, much later, in the ashes of the crystal palaces.
And in this Poetica podcast from RN, you've been listening to Tales of a Severed Head by Rashida Madani. Our reader in French and English was Mingzhu He. We also heard an introduction to the 1001 Nights by Marina Warner. The program was produced by Prithvi Varatharajan and the sound engineer was Tim Simons. Tales of a Severed Head is translated by Marilyn Hacker and published by Yale University Press. Just visit the Poetica webpage for more details.